Hi, I'm Katrina Daniel, and welcome to Primetime Crime, a podcast for people who want to know what goes on behind the scenes of the most notorious trending crime stories and what's going on in the minds of those involved in those stories. What are the detectives, the judges, the defense attorneys, and the prosecutors thinking? You'll hear it all on Primetime Crime, the podcast. This is Primetime Crime, and I'm Katrina Daniel, and we have the coolest guest today, psychic lawyer Mark Anthony, author of the just-released book, The Afterlife Frequency. You're going to love listening to him. I did. And I got answers to lots of questions that I've always had. Keep an open mind, guys, and I'm going to bet you will find psychic lawyer Mark Anthony as interesting and as fun as I did.
Conducted probably close to or even more by now 15,000 readings in my life, and in each session, let's say if I was doing a one-on-one for you, at least six spirits are going to come through. You know, spirits are never alone. We think they're alone. They're not alone. All right, and they're going to come through.
It is my great pleasure and so much fun and such a thing I've been looking forward to be joined by psychic lawyer Mark Anthony. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. We're really thrilled. So let's roll. Tell me how you became the psychic lawyer. I mean, that seems like two totally polar opposite things.
It does, because people think that lawyers are vampiric, blood-sucking sociopaths. And that psychics run around waving Ouija boards, snorting granola in fields of daisies. And the thing is, you have to realize that both jobs, both aspects of my career are about evidence and helping people, because attorneys certainly have to present evidence to substantiate their cases. And as a medium, I'm what's known as an evidential medium. So I have to bring forth facts and verifiable information from spirits to guarantee the genuineness and the authenticity of the contact. But how did this happen? Well, I was born into a family of psychics and mediums. Both my parents had these abilities, but my dad was a U.S. Navy SEAL. And when he got out of the Navy, he was a NASA engineer. My mother was a commercial illustrator. So we were the all-American family next door. Kind of more like, you know, not so much the Brady Bunch, more like maybe the Addams Family, I guess. But you know, we were, for all intents and purposes, the all-American family next door. But I researched my family's psychic history and found people with these abilities on both sides going back into the 1890s. And in my books, I write about, you know, like how my mom and dad, they met at a dance after my dad got out of the Navy. And he said, yeah, they were attracted to each other, but there was something they couldn't quite put their finger on. And on their third date, my mother said to him, she said, Earl, there's something you need to know about me. I see spirits. And he goes, you know, I'll edit out the sailor response, but it came down to blankety blank, so do I. And they realized that was the connection. And it's really quite interesting. In fact, on my mother's side of the family, they emigrated from Italy. And my maternal great-grandmother, Giovanna, was known in the North Jersey and New York City, Little Italy community as the woman who knows things. And when PBS did a special back in 2016 called The Italian Americans, they actually had an entire segment about Giovanna, and they referenced her psychic abilities. And I remember when it aired, all my cousins, you know, were on the phone and were like, oh my God, did you see that? But it has been documented, and it's they're quite interesting stories when I started delving into this. So I was being groomed to go into the clergy, and which is not unusual for mediums to be drawn to that. But I felt there were too many rules and regulations, and so I ended up in law. So I kind of jumped out of the regulatory frying pan into the rule-laden fire.
Yeah, the one that's tightly conscripted usually, right?
Absolutely.
Tell me how you work and what is it you do? You don't practice law anymore, or do you?
That's a long story, but I still maintain my certification. I am a member of the Florida Bar, the Washington, D.C. Bar, and the United States Supreme Court Bar. And while I'm no longer currently practicing, I do appear on shows like this one and several others as a legal analyst in high profile cases. I'm also known as the Psychic Explorer. So I discuss ancient mysteries, supernatural phenomenon. I'm a near-death experiencer and near-death experience researcher. And that's why, you know, I write books about this and present lectures on it. So I decided, though, to put the full focus of my life into my spiritual work, which not only includes doing readings, but also group events, both online and in person. And in fact, I'll be speaking at three major conferences this year: the Helping Parents Heal annual conference in August in Phoenix, Arizona. And then in September, I'm the keynote speaker for the International Association for Near-Death Studies, and that will be in Salt Lake City, Ions. And then in October, I am one of the featured speakers at the Edgar Cayce Association for Research Enlightenment in Virginia Beach at their Ancient Mysteries Conference, and I'm presenting Sacred Astrology, the Mystery of the Star of Bethlehem and the Mystical Magi. So I've got, I do a whole broad spectrum of things. Helping Parents Heal is such a wonderful organization to work with because they help parents heal and help parents try to recover from the loss of a loved one. And spirit communication is part of their approach. So what I do as a medium and my colleagues by connecting loved ones here with their deceased loved ones, or rather their ones loved ones in spirit, is an important therapeutic step in the journey through grief.
How do detectives and police departments contact you? And what do they say? And, you know, having known a bazillion cops, I would think most of them are highly skeptic.
They are, but Here's an interesting thing a lot of people don't realize. Psychics and mediums have been helping the police for decades. And psychic intuition is hearsay evidence. I mean, hearsay, an out-of-court statement offered to prove the truth of the matter asserted. Now, can you think of something more hearsay than a message from a spirit? And generally, you can get around hearsay. There's at least 23 different exceptions to the hearsay rule, but they involve, can the evidence be cross-examined? In other words, you know, there's certain out-of-court statements that can be examined, and there's certain things like documents that have official seals on them that get around hearsay. But with spirit communication, while it may not be admissible in court, what we can do is give the police leads and point them in the right direction. And that those leads can result in them obtaining admissible evidence. Now, for example, I was on the CBS TV show, The Doctors.
Yeah, and I saw that. Yeah.
Okay, so I did a reading for the family of Alison Feldman, who was brutally murdered, and information came through. At the time, it didn't make a lot of sense to the family members because I kept saying they're going to catch the perpetrator. He's going to be in jail behind bars on some other type of charge. I said the police are really missing something with the blood test, that they have to expand the parameters of the DNA test. This was all coming from Allison's spirit. And I kept getting Franklin and Phillips. I kept getting Franklin and Phillips, these two names. Long story short, the family, after the show, they went back to Phoenix, Arizona, and they talked to the police. And the police, for the first time ever in the history of the state of Arizona, implemented the familial DNA test. And I'm sure that you're familiar with that. And the familial DNA test expands the parameters to look for markers in people who can be close relatives of the DNA samples. Because at the scene of Allison's murder, they did recover some DNA that did not belong to her. Well, at that time, less than a dozen states were employing familial DNA. And immediately they found a marker on a close relative. And so they found this guy in jail on child molestation charges and then realized that the DNA was a close relative. And they found that on another guy that had just been arrested for like his fourth or fifth drunk driving charge. And that was the killer. That's the DNA match. He's currently awaiting trial in the state of Arizona. Now, what about the names Franklin and Phillips? Well, unbeknownst to me or anybody else at the time, the very first time the familial DNA test was ever used was in the state of California to find the grim sleeper serial killer whose name was Lonnie Franklin. And here it gets even better. At the time that I did the reading in the state of New York, somebody was challenging the validity of the familial DNA test, and his name was Terrence Phillips. So it's really fascinating when these pieces of information come through. And people say, you're cold reading, that's coincidence. Really? Then of all the names in the universe, I get the first time, the name of the first person that familial DNA test was used, and on the most serious challenge to it legally, which the familial DNA test flew through with flying colors. So I understand that pretty much, I think at last count, last time I checked, almost all of the 50 states are now implementing the familial DNA test. But see, what happened there? What happened there, Katrina? Okay, it would be very nice if the spirit came through and said, this is the guy's name, address, serial number. People say, why don't they do that? You have to realize, and I explain this in great detail in my book, The Afterlife Frequency, the subtitle, The Scientific Proof of Spiritual Contact and How That Awareness Will Change Your Life, is that I'm communicating with another dimension. And what a spirit is, and I've introduced the term the electromagnetic soul to explain what we really are, which is a soul, pure consciousness, which is eternal electromagnetic energy. And so an electromagnetic soul is emitting waves of frequency. That wave of frequency then begins to interface with the electrical system in my brain, and those impulses get converted into recognizable concepts based on my memories, feelings, and cultural associations. So as much as we would like this to be texting or instant messaging, you have to realize that we are communicating with an incredible infinite intelligence that my human brain has to work with.
Translate.
Exactly, translate.
How do spirits appear to you? In the form in which they lived, or in their death form, or as just a voice or a thought, or what?
Well, it's sort of all of the above. Generally, I've conducted probably close to, or even more by now, 15,000 readings in my life. Woo! And in each session, let's say if I was doing a one-on-one for you, at least six spirits are going to come through. You know, spirits are never alone. We think they're alone. They're not alone, all right? And they're going to come through. And so generally, first what I'll get is their gender. Then I get an idea of their connection to you. So if I say that they're on your level, that means your generation, brother, sister, cousin, spouse, friend, below your level, child, niece, nephew, above your level, parent, aunt, uncle. They don't have to be relatives. So let's say a mother, somebody on the mother level comes through. Well, maybe that was a boss, a teacher, a professor, a mentor that you may have had. Then they're going to start transmitting to me. I usually feel how they died. I feel physical sensations. Then I may get a visual. Generally, they're going to appear to me how they did prior to passing. So let's say, Katrina, that your 92-year-old grandmother who passed comes through. Well, if she shows up looking 30 years old and all healthy and all that, you're going to be like, who's that? But if I'm able to describe her, but what's really fascinating that I've found is many times once I lock on to the spirit, once he or she or they start transmitting things to me, oftentimes they'll morph into younger versions of themselves. And I remember the first time I encountered that, it was the spirit of my mother. It was roughly a month after she passed, and it was in a dream. and I walked into this room. And see, dreams are a very popular form of communication with spirits. It has to do with the brainwave frequencies. And I can get into that, but it's rather technical. But she was in this white room and it was beautiful. Everything in it was beautiful. And she's sitting there. I go, "Mom, you look so young and beautiful. Why do you do that?" She goes, "Because I can." And I started laughing. Well, who wouldn't look 22 and great? All right. But then I had this knowing that she explained to me, we're pure energy. Energy doesn't get old, sick, tired, or die. So they will come through looking like they did prior to passing so that we can identify them. And then they may morph into these young, beautiful versions, or people that had physical disabilities. I've done this hundreds, thousands of times. For example, I was doing a reading for a gentleman, and this male came through for him, and he was on these arm braces and restraints, and he had slurred speech. And then all of a sudden he stood up and he threw the crutches away and he started jumping around dancing. And I described him, and the gentleman said, "Oh my God, that was my brother. He had cerebral palsy and you're showing him dancing. He always said he wished he could dance." And so, I remember that connection. It just, made me so overwhelmed, because his brother came through and said, "I'm fine now. My body is whole. My energy is whole." Mm-hmm. So, I could go on with story after story like this, but what we have to realize is that our electromagnetic soul, think of it as a drop of water, and that when we die, that drop of water plunges into this eternal sea of consciousness. I call it the collective consciousness. You're still an individual, but now you're energetically linked to other spirits, so on and so forth. And that is why, Katrina, during spirit communication, they can often bring up things that far exceeded the scope of anything that they knew in this world. For example, in the case I described in Arizona that I did with the doctors, that's how the spirit of Alison Feldman was able to tell me about the first time the familial DNA test was used and the challenge to it. Also, how the police were going to catch this guy by using that test because he'd be behind bars on some other charge. And at the time of the reading, he hadn't been arrested yet. So this is why, or partially why, spirits are able to give us information in many instances, which far exceeded the scope of anything that they knew, because they're patched into the collective consciousness.
So do you think that detectives and law enforcement as a whole is getting less skeptical and more accepting of your talents or your thoughts or your opinion?
It depends on the police that you're working with. And once again, usually what we do is behind the scenes. I remember I was consulted by a naval military intelligence officer, and it was about a pilot in Gulf War I. Apparently in Gulf War I, the U.S. only lost one fighter craft, and the pilot was never found. And he came through and I described him, and he was describing his family members, and she was taking down all these notes. And I kept this, explaining, parachuted and was able to, he was captured, but he killed one of his attackers. And then he was brutally beaten and his body burned. And she was like, "Okay, thank you." And about 3 months later, I saw an article in the news that I think it was an F-15, it could have been an F-18. The wreckage had been finally discovered. And I was like, "Well, that's interesting." And then I got this short, very terse note in the mail: "Everything that you brought through coincides with what we found." And I wanted to know what, but I also knew that this was still a classified matter.
Right. Do you ever get emotionally involved in any of these? I would think that you might become a sponge and soak up people's desperation, their heartbreak, their sense of loss. How do you protect yourself against that?
I think my years of experience as a trial lawyer, because I was a prosecutor, criminal defense, personal injury litigation attorney, I did a lot of really heavy duty cases. And as an effective attorney, you have to be objective and not get personally involved. It's the same thing in the medical profession. You can't be a good doctor if your heart is breaking over the person that you're performing surgery on or treating. And it's the same thing as a medium. I have to focus on the spirit communication and convey what I'm getting as accurately and objectively as possible. That being said, there are and have been many instances where what comes through really tugs at the heartstrings.
Yeah. I was pretty good as a reporter for a long, long time, but then there are some cases that you just really can't shake and you feel so bad for the people.
Well, sure. I mean, we're human beings. Yes, we're professionals. You're the consummate professional in the field of journalism. And, you know, I try to be that in both as an attorney and as a medium, but some of the things that come through are so horrific that we have to deal with.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the huge number of military personnel suffering from PTSD,
yes.
post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yes.
I mean, these are trained professionals, but they're human beings too.
Yeah. Let's go off on another tangent here. What is your feeling about reincarnation?
Absolutely, I believe in it. I'm smiling because in my book, Evidence of Eternity, I wrote a chapter about reincarnation. I also present a lecture on reincarnation. And every spirit that where the topic comes up, they all say, yeah, this is true. In the field of near-death experience research, pretty much every NDE-er, that's what they call us, NDE-ers, reincarnation is real. And this also is supported by my electromagnetic soul theory, because energy is neither created nor destroyed, only transferred. So think of our world as AM radio, the other side as FM radio. And when we die, we quantum leap from AM to FM, and then eventually we quantum leap back, and the EMS attaches to another host, meaning a fetus. So I'm giving you the extremely abbreviated version of my explanation for this. And, you know, this is not some far-fetched theory. There's a number of scientists who've read my book and endorsed it. The Afterlife Frequency, my latest book, has been endorsed by the top NDE and Afterlife and Survival of Consciousness researchers in the world.
Do you think you actually have powers or just acute powers of observation and deductive reasoning?
Well, I think that my powers of deductive reasoning come into it. I was an unusual child. At the age of 3, not only could I spell Tyrannosaurus Rex, but I would give my family an entire lecture on what it was. And I remember, you know, I was reading at that time, and, you know, my parents said, you were difficult, not behavior-wise, but the questions would never stop. You know, and then when I realized Daddy worked with astronauts, my dad was my hero. And the one thing that really stuck with me, Katrina, or one of the things, and I had a great relationship with my parents, and I'm getting choked up talking about them, is I remember I was 8 years old and I was looking at the stars with my dad, and I was asking him about infinity and space travel. And what he said to me, he said, Mark, there's an explanation for everything. If you put enough research, funding, and focus into anything, you're going to find the answer. It will be based on science. We may not have the technology now, but eventually we'll develop it. And so in my research, everybody is capable of a psychic or mediumistic experience. Why? Because we all have the same basic physiology. And there's two main receptor areas, the pineal gland in the brain and the solar plexus, which is just at the bottom of the ribcage. And for your listeners that do yoga, the pineal gland is the third eye chakra. That is the indigo one. and the solar plexus is the yellow chakra. And the pineal gland is a little bit small, bigger than a grain of rice, smaller than a lima bean, highly complex. And recent studies conducted in Europe and Israel discovered that there are calcite and magnetite crystals within this. So we have a radio station on our head because the first radio was a piece of quartz crystal with a copper wire running low levels of electricity through it. And so this is where we receive the visual, the data, the factual information. Yet in the solar plexus, which is the second most complex bundle of nerves outside of the cerebral cortex, that's where we get the emotional feelings, the sense of knowing. Now, for everyone who's listening, who's a parent, ever get a feeling something's not happening and not right with your child? Maybe he or she is in danger. Every parent listening is going to say yes. And women's intuition, you feel it in your stomach, all right? Gut instinct. Where do you think that expression came from? From the solar plexus.
Yep.
So physiologically, we all have the same equipment. It's just that some people's may be more fine-tuned than others. We're all good at doing different things. I mean, I can swim in a pool, but I'm never going to be Michael Phelps. I can bang around on a guitar, but I'm not going to be a Brad Paisley or an Eric Clapton. And so everybody is capable of having a psychic and mediumistic experience, but it doesn't mean that they're going to have one to the extent that someone like me or one of my colleagues might.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I call that gut instinct the little voice, and I have learned the hard way to always pay attention.
Always trust it. Talk to any first responder, talk to anybody in the military, and they will all agree, trust your gut instinct.
Yeah.
And every time you overrule it, and see, the work that I do with men, particularly with grieving, I believe that women are better at embracing and processing their emotions than men are. You know, men, we got to deny it. The only socially acceptable emotion to display is anger. You know, that's worked real well. But the thing there is, once men start realizing that your gut instinct isn't a fluke, isn't hocus pocus, and when you're around military and first responders, they always tell me that if I didn't listen to my gut, I'd be dead right now.
Thanks for listening to Primetime Crime, the podcast. Follow us on Facebook at Primetime Crime and on Instagram and Twitter at PrimetimeCrime_. Post your comments and tell us what true crime stories you'd like to hear about. Subscribe to Primetime Crime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. Thanks a lot.